I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
Frody is on the road today, so it's just going to be John and I for this new episode of Countercurrents Radio. John and I are going to talk about a couple of particularly scurrilous bits of journalism. I'm clawing the air, making scare quotes. One is a brand new piece in Vice that both John and I were contacted for, to be interviewed for, and we declined. The author is Tess Owens, and the topic is Arctos Media, which is a topic that John knows quite a lot about, and so do I. So anyway, we thought we would just go through this horrible bit of writing and just sort of read it aloud and dissect it and respond to it, because really, the problems with the left are not just on their basic principles and premises. It's like everything they say, even the and buts are lies. You know, yes. these people can't tell the truth to save their own lives.
Well, I really think part of it is dishonesty, but I think also part of it's just incompetence, because I mean, this is only the latest in there must have been, you know, hundreds of articles on our little milieu, in the media over the last few years. And I can't think of any that didn't have just, you know, blatant inaccuracies.
Right.
And you know, some of it, of course, is because they're deliberately trying to make us look bad. But I think it's also just either laziness, or they don't want to go to the original sources, or... Well, let me say, though, I mean, this woman, Tess Owens, she did contact me.
And me. So she tried.
But, you know, first of all, I'm not going to work with an organization like Vice, even in relation to Arctos and Daniel Freeberg. I mean, I'm sure people who follow Countercurrents know about my past with Arctos, and people who don't can go and see the article that I wrote about all that 2 years ago. But in any event, I'm certainly not going to, you know, go to an organization like Vice to try to sort of further my own personal disputes.
Settle scores. And that's the kind of thing that Freeberg does. He goes to the press to settle his scores with people in the movement. It's very low behavior.
But I also feel like when they contact you, these journalists always say the same thing, which is they just want to get the truth out. You know, they just want to get your side of the story.
Right.
But I don't talk to journalists anymore. The reason is because, you know, I finally realized that they're not trying to make you look good. I mean, even if they play it in a way like, you know, well, we want to get the truth about Arctos, I know they're going to make Arctos look bad and they're going to make me look bad.
So right.
There's really nothing to be gained by working with these people.
Anything you say to a journalist can and will be used against you.
Exactly.
So let's just read through this. This is on Vice News. It's brand new, May 30th, by Tess Owen, who's like, they're one of their people who covers the alt-right. Online platforms like 8chan and Gab have helped far-right extremist ideologies go global. But when the alt-right wants to put an academic imprimatur on racist ideas, it turns to a small publishing house in Budapest. Okay, so these are two sentences now that we've read, and already there are two things here that are outrageously inaccurate. First, what in the world is an academic imprimatur, and how do you get that from a non-academic publishing outfit?
Yes. I mean, when I was with Arctos, I certainly tried to give it an academic feel, but I'll be honest, I mean, you know, we never achieved that, just because in the academic publishing world, everything has to be reviewed by several people with academic credentials, and we simply didn't have those kinds of resources in what we were doing. So I tried to do the best I could to make the books good.
But an academic imprimatur literally means something like, you know, the name University of Chicago Press or Harvard University Press. There's no such thing as an academic imprimatur of a non-academic publisher.
Yes.
It's just sort of loose and vague writing. It's just a kind of fuzzy-mindedness and laziness that's so rampant in the media. And then it says it turns to a small publishing house in Budapest. Well, I'm sorry, but Arctos isn't based in Budapest. Daniel Freeberg decamped some time ago from Budapest to what? He's in Poland now. He's in Warsaw.
I think so.
Yeah. You know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if Arctos still exists, they're going to be calling it a Budapest-based publishing house because they're just lazy.
For years, they were always referring to us as India-based, which, of course, we were at one time. But, I mean, calling a publishing house like Arctos based anywhere is a misnomer because, of course, these days you can do this sort of work from anywhere.
Right. And legally speaking, Arctos is based in the UK, right?
Well, certainly when I was there, it was. I have no idea how things are arranged there now. But yeah, when I was there, it was certainly. Well, I think she must have known that because later she refers to the corporate paperwork.
Right.
Arctos, so she must have seen it. But anyway.
Yeah. So today, Arctos publishes more than 120 titles by 54 authors. The overarching theme of Arctos's work, Western civilization is under attack by immigration and liberalism and could be wiped out if something isn't done about it, and soon.
Oh my gosh, how could anyone seriously believe that?
How could anybody seriously believe that there's any problems with Western civilization? I mean, how would you characterize this characterization, though, of Arctos's work, the overarching theme of what Arctos does? Does this include, say, Tilak's Arctic homeland in the Vedas?
Right. Or even Avila. Well, okay, Avila wrote about liberalism, but Avila never wrote about immigration.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, they usually focus on just some of the books when they want to, not just Arctos, but any of us when they want to target us. They pick out the things that they think sound the most extreme.
Right.
Focus on that. Like, she doesn't mention it in this article, but in a lot of articles about Arctos, they claim that we publish texts from a neo-Nazi website. What they mean is there's a collection of essays by Michael O'Meara on Guillaume Fay that we published while I was still there. And some of them had previously been published. I forget what the site was.
Some of that had been published at Countercurrents.
Well, not just that wasn't the one they meant. There was another one that was more extreme.
Vanguard News Network?
Yeah, that's it, VNN. So they took that as evidence that we were publishing neo-Nazi texts, which is, of course, ridiculous, because if you read the essays, there's nothing neo-Nazi about them in any way.
Right.
But they, you know, they can use a tenuous connection like that to try
They call it a linkage.
Which is, they're always playing 5 degrees of separation with all of us, like, well, so-and-so met so-and-so, or, you know, they once were in the same room together. That proves that there's this collusion between...
Yeah.
I don't think they realize how much, division and different factions of this little world of ours. So
right.
To think that, like, everybody is secretly working behind the scenes in a united front to wipe out all immigrants or, you know, whatever. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Arctos is just one example of the far right's attempt to push into the mainstream by repackaging old ideas in language that's more politically and socially palatable. Instead of talking about whiteness, well, first of all, what's so unpalatable about whiteness? But anyway, let's continue.
Yes.
Arctos's authors use sanitized terms like European and identitarian. They're implying that this is an intellectually dishonest enterprise.
Right, and they say, of course, the same thing about us.
Yeah.
And the problem with this is that they never want to take our ideas at face value. They always assume that, you know, behind this, we really just want to recreate the Third Reich.
Yeah, exactly.
In exact detail. And if we talk about any other subject, that's just
window dressing. It's just a sign that they have an unhealthy, obsessive minds and are not really open to any kind of contradictory information that might require them to revise their thinking, even just a little bit. So instead of talking about whiteness, they use sanitized terms like European and identitarian. One of their best-selling writers is the neo-fascist Italian ideologue Julius Evola. Well, in what sense is he a neo-fascist?
Well, in fact, you know, he was brought to trial in Rome in 50 or 51 for allegedly being a neo-fascist.
And he was acquitted, right?
Yes, because he said, you know, my ideas are just those that every sane and normal person held to be correct and true throughout the world before 1789.
Yeah, exactly.
And the court accepted that argument and exonerated him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go on to say that he was admired by dictator Benito Mussolini, which is just a blatant falsehood. Mussolini was aware of Evola, but there's no indication that Mussolini was familiar with Evola's work or gave
particularly
it
admired him. Yeah.
He knew about Evola's racial ideas.
Yeah.
He did later in the 1930s ask Evola to develop a sort of Italian fascist racial doctrine that was different from National Socialist racial ideology. But that I wouldn't say that amounts to admiration. That tries to make it sound like Evola was like, you know, the intellectual inspiration behind Mussolini.
The other thing is that, so what if Mussolini admired him? You know, Mussolini liked Puccini too. Mussolini liked probably liked spaghetti with pomodoro, you know, and he
liked Dante.
He liked Dante. Well, we have to light the matches and incinerate our Dante. It's basically just a lazy-minded smear. Evola died in 1974, but Arctos has continued to translate and market his works. That almost implies that Arctos was translating and publishing his works before he died in 1974.
Well, the other problem with that statement is that they completely ignore the fact that Inner Traditions, which is, you know, several orders of magnitude larger and more influential than Arctos, has been publishing Evola since the 80s.
Right.
And nobody's going to accuse them of being right-wing extremists.
Right, right.
So the idea that that is somehow, you know, something sinister behind that.
Right.
And trying to make it sound like Arctos is the only one doing this is just ridiculous. Well, we've published Evola.
We published Evola too. Yeah, exactly. But Arctos has continued to translate and market his works today. Ooh. Today, his influence extends from 8chan and 4chan trolls. I imagine one or two of those people have actually read Evola, but I wouldn't consider those to be, you know, the primary people who would be reading and his work and being influenced by it. But they're distasteful, right? So she's trying to link Evola with the most distasteful people who might read him, all the way up to important political figures like former Trump advisor Steve Bannon, who did mention Evola.
Once,
yeah.
In passing,
yeah.
Like 5 years ago.
Yes. I just love the beginning of the next comment, the next paragraph here. This attempt to rebrand white nationalism is embodied by Arctos' founder, Daniel Friberg, a Swedish business magnate. Okay, I can't read any further. Magnate. A magnate is somebody who's big.
Like Citizen Kane.
Yeah,
Charles
big
Foster Kane.
Businessman. Friberg isn't a big businessman. Other idiots in the press have actually referred to him as a Swedish mining tycoon.
Yes.
You'd think that would imply that he's rich. He's not rich. He's quite far from it. But he puts these lies out there to try and magnify his status. And the reason why, and I told Tess Owen this, she kept badgering me to talk to her. I said, look, there is a symbiotic relationship between people like you and people like Friberg. You magnify his importance in our movement in order to make him out to be a formidable enemy for your attack pieces.
Because they realize that the truth isn't all that scary.
The truth isn't all that scary.
They have to magnify it so that he's sort of like the anti-George Soros.
Yeah, that he's got
all of his money into these various...
Yeah, he's dressed like the Monopoly man. He's got all these fingers and all these
pies. He's a plutocrat.
He's a plutocrat, yeah. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, Arctos has always been undercapitalized and lurching from one financial crisis to another, doing Kickstarters to desperately bring in money, selling tickets for events well in advance, constantly trying to stay afloat. And so the very idea that he is a business magnate is so absurd. But I imagine Tess Owen encountered this claim, and if she was ever inclined to check it, she probably wouldn't, because it just makes him seem bigger and badder and therefore more of a legitimate target for her smear piece.
Well, certainly the line of questioning that she sent to me, which, you know, I didn't answer, but suggested that she doesn't really believe that.
Oh, okay.
I think she was definitely, wrote that to make it seem scarier.
The other
interesting thing in that sentence is that they say rebrand white nationalism. You know, since Christchurch, they've been going out of their way to make white nationalism something that everyone in the movement adheres to, either secretly or explicitly.
Right, because they want to make that an automatic strike for your YouTube channel, or an automatic strike for being deplatformed from Facebook and things like that.
Exactly.
So they're just shoving that term in there. And of course, we can't overlook the phrase Arctos's founder, Daniel Freeberg. Who is the founder of Arctos, John? you were around at the time. How long was it before Daniel Freeberg got involved with Arctos?
Well, Daniel was involved from the beginning. He's tried to downplay my own role in the organization. There were actually about half a dozen people involved in Arctos's founding, and I'm not going to deny that Daniel was important. He certainly was, but there were a number of people.
Yeah, but there was an organization that was sort of the predecessor of Arctos, ITP.
Integral Tradition Publishing, that's right. Yeah, I did that with some friends, and there's about half a dozen books that ITP produced between 2006 and 2009 that are now published by Arctos. So we sort of got absorbed into. So I guess in a way, yes, you could say I've been with Arctos, or I was with Arctos since before it was actually created. But at least when Arctos as an entity came into existence, I mean, Daniel was there.
He was there at that time. Okay.
He wasn't in India with us until later, but yeah, that was that.
To say he's Arctos's founder.
No, that's not accurate.
Yeah, it gives a mistaken impression. He founded the company in 2009. Again, it's just singular here. And eventually became business partners with Richard Spencer. Well, not in the same company, for God's sake, although that would seem to be implied here.
As far as I know, I don't think Richard ever had any direct involvement with Arctos.
No, they're talking about the alt-right corporation.
Yeah, but that was something separate from Arctos.
Definitely.
Ever absorbed into that.
Yeah. One of the most infamous white nationalists in the U.S., and he was slated as a speaker at the violent Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in August 2017. Today, at 41, Freeberg wears a suit and tie and has fashioned himself a media baron of the fringe far right. Well, he's fashioned himself a media baron with the cooperation of mainstream media hacks like Tess Owen, who are willing to propagate his sort of fake, magnified image of himself. And, of course, what that does is that basically helps him defraud people in the movement.
He certainly makes him out to be bigger than he is.
Yeah, bigger than he is, more competent than he is, more authoritative than he is. People might actually throw money in his direction thinking that it will pay handsome dividends and things like that. And so she is a willing mouthpiece of a kind of fraudulent campaign of self-promotion that he is constantly engaged in. But he does wear a suit and tie. He wears a suit and tie all the time, right?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. But despite the fact that outfits like Arctos, I love that word outfit, it just makes it seem so casual. Well, casual, not like the work of a business magnate, right? Outfits, ramshackle, little rinky-dink outfits like Arctos.
She can't even be consistent.
Exactly.
In one essay, 1 minute it's, you know, this powerhouse of fascism.
Yeah.
And the next, yeah, it's an outfit.
Yeah.
Barely even worthy of the name.
Yeah, yeah. They use careful, calculated language that doesn't explicitly call for violence. For instance, saying that we oppose violence in my case for, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the same thing they say about us.
Yeah. The ideas they promote have been used by some to justify violence. Well, that's true. That's definitely true. Can you think of any other books that have been used by some to justify violence? Well, let's see. There's a whole library of Marxist literature, which you can buy from the world's largest capitalist, the owner of Amazon.com, by the way, with two-day free shipping. There are libraries of books advocating violence for Marxist revolution. There is, of course, the long and bloody history of, well, the biblical religions.
Yes, especially one in particular.
Yeah, Christianity, Islam, etc., and so on and so forth. So, it's almost a banality that should go without saying, really, that some ideas are used to promote violence. That doesn't mean that every Christian is responsible for the Crusades or the Albigensian Crusade, for instance.
Well, remember that Sam Dixon at the Amren mentioned the fact that a couple of years ago there was this sniper who killed a bunch of police.
Yeah.
Where was that in the U.S.?
It was in Dallas. It was a black guy who killed five police officers who was associated with Black Lives Matter.
Right. Yet nobody has suggested that Black Lives Matter should be deplatformed the way that we are being.
Exactly. Nobody says, you know, Black Lives Matter. Use careful, calculated language that don't explicitly call for violence. Yet they might be just deceiving us. The mosque shooter in New Zealand... She doesn't even bother to look up his name. The mosque shooter in New Zealand espoused many of the beliefs expressed in Arcto's books, including calling Muslim immigration to Europe an invasion.
Well Viktor Orban calls it an invasion.
Yeah. Well,
of course, they probably think he should be deplatformed.
In 732, you know, I'm sure she would probably say that when the Moors conquered Spain, that wasn't an invasion either. That was just immigration.
I've actually had leftists use that kind of argument with me before.
Yeah. This is a pretty compelling case. I think Arctos is responsible for the massacre in New Zealand. More recently, an Indiana man sentenced to 3 years in federal prison for painting swastikas on a Carmel synagogue and scorching its grounds told lawyers his wife had fed him pseudo-academic propaganda that purported to prove her white supremacist beliefs. It's not knowing what writer she was referring to. Well, why is it even mentioned then? I mean, this is just obviously smearing.
Pseudo-academic. She already established that in the opening paragraph that Arctos is an academic influence.
Or pseudo-academic. Yeah,
but
exactly.
Now
it's pseudo-academic. I can't keep this straight. Neither can she.
I've been meaning to write an essay on this in one of these days. I'll finally get around to finishing it. But it's very important to them to always call a pseudo-academic. I mean, even though many of us, such as yourself, Greg, who have the same academic credentials or more that any of these people have,
right?
They refuse to admit that people who don't share their initial premises about race, about immigration, and so forth, that somehow invalidates everything else. So if you are an intellectual and you actually believe that Europe is and Western civilization are under threat from immigration and multiculturalism and so forth, that just indicates that somehow you didn't learn this stuff correctly.
Yeah.
You read all the same books and you did all the same work that any other academic had to do, but you didn't come to the right conclusions. So I'm sorry, Greg, you're a pseudo-academic.
Well, you know, I am a failed academic, and not only did I fail in real academia, I recently failed at academia.edu, which is going to be the topic of another discussion very soon. Pseudo-academic propaganda. Well, there's absolutely no basis for thinking that this was connected at all to our ideas, and why is this even in here? Well, because it's a smear.
Yes.
Quote, Freeburg is the architect of this new souped-up, cleaned-up, more professional right wing. Souped-up, cleaned-up, more... Oh, Christ. Says Hans Jacob Schindler, senior director at the Counter-Extremism Project and the former coordinator of the UN Security Council team monitoring the Islamic State group, Al-Qaeda, and the Taliban.
So that's right. Arctos and probably we are on the same level as ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Well, I don't think this man has the proper credentials to talk about us because he's monitoring Islamic groups.
Yeah.
I think that this is a clear case of using somebody's credentials in one area to spuriously give him plausibility to talk about something he probably knows nothing about. And to say that Freeburg is the architect of the new right wing is just obviously not true. That's
no,
just complete hyperbole.
Again, it's him, the anti-Soros again.
Yeah, exactly.
They need somebody who's the figurehead.
But yeah. I hope their analysis of the Islamic State isn't similarly stupid. It might
explain how they got as far as they did.
Might explain U.S. foreign policy. Yeah.
But within the context of this article, I think that the reason they include that is because they want people to be thinking of ISIS and Al-Qaeda when they think of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, these are just the white equivalent of,
yes.
ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Minus the many millions of deaths and the entire countries destroyed, etc.
Or the daily threats of violence.
The daily threats of violence. The daily terrorism in European countries. Yeah, exactly. Minus all that, we're just like them. I love this continuing quote. I mean, the ultra-right has understood that the baseball-wielding,
what does that mean?
Cross-burning neo-Nazi types... Oh, Jesus!
Does that mean if you play baseball?
I guess it does. I think maybe he meant to say baseball bat, but he's just too lazy to say baseball bat, or his thinking is so lazy that he didn't say all the words. But listen to this lazy smearing. Baseball-wielding, cross-burning neo-Nazi types. Neo-Nazis don't burn crosses. He's talking about the KKK. It's all just a muddle in this person's head. This expert that we're supposed to take seriously are not getting them anywhere as far as political influence is concerned. So that's true. We're certainly not getting anywhere from these baseball-playing, cross-burning neo-Nazi types. Because Arctos's content stops short of being explicitly white nationalist.
Well, that again, I mean, Arctos publishes Alain de Benoist, for example, and the suggestion yet again is that that's all just a smokescreen
for the real
agenda. But I don't think Alain de Benoist would say...
He's a white nationalist.
And there's no way you can interpret his work as embracing that.
Well, so. He actually wrote to me and says, Greg, I just don't understand this white nationalism thing.
Well, I think it's tough for non-Americans.
Yeah.
Or at least people from Europe.
Yeah.
I think people in other diaspora countries understand it. But.
Exactly. But the implication is that Guillaume Fay and Tilak, who died, in the early 20th century?
And Avila.
Avila and all these other people are really just white nationalists, but they're just stopping short of fully admitting that that's what their agenda is.
Yes.
Arctos's content, Tilak, Avila, a three-volume history of the Zoroastrians in India.
Oh yes, Porus.
Yeah.
All that
stuff is just stopping short of avowing explicit white nationalism.
Or Stephen Rosen, the Hare Krishna academic, well, scholar. Hare Krishna scholar.
He's a pseudo-academic.
Oh, then now he is because he's published by Arctos. But this is where the article starts to get sinister because, okay, I have my disagreements with Arctos, but I don't believe in deplatforming for anybody. And I... Well, of course, I was there for when most of Arctos' books were published. I still believe in them. But clearly now the article takes a direction where it's like they've established how dangerous Arctos is.
Yeah, so it needs to be deplatformed.
Yeah, it has to be suppressed. It has to be silenced.
Now they're coming for Arctos. Because Arctos's content stops short of being explicitly white nationalist, the company has been able to skirt social media policies. Again, they're just dancing on the line. They're just playing a game, barring hate speech. Their books are sold widely via mainstream vendors, and they have a podcast on Spotify and iTunes where hosts discuss topics like the decline of Western art, the role of women in modern society, and even the fad keto carnivore diet.
But you see, this is all just a smokescreen for hate, Greg.
Yeah, yeah.
That people on the right couldn't possibly really be interested in these things.
Yeah, just, yeah.
You know, it's just to try to make us seem respectable.
Yeah.
So that later on we can bring out the baseballs.
The baseballs. And start beating people with baseballs. Yes. Yes. I just love how the fad keto diet, and there are also, of course, vegans and vegetarians on the right. Yeah. Yeah. Arctos also enjoys a relatively robust presence on Facebook with 43,000 followers. How many of those were purchased, by the way, from Indian fraud scammer types?
I don't know, but a lot.
A lot. And a Shop Now button that directs users to the company's website. A Facebook spokesman said they would look into the page and take appropriate action if it violated their policies on hate speech.
So I'm wondering,
this page was still live as of Thursday morning.
See, so that means now maybe Vice and maybe Antifa groups are going to pester Facebook to take this page now.
Yeah.
Just like, well, ours vanished close to 2 years ago now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because we didn't toe the line or didn't skirt the line as effectively. Yeah. Barnes & Noble didn't reply to a request for comment on their sale of Arctos's books.
Yeah, because they're not allowed to divulge that kind of information.
Yeah. And an Amazon spokesman said they were unable to comment on specific publishers, but added that they have vetting systems to identify hateful content that violates their policies. Yeah, right.
I heard that one Arctos book, this Affair Hearing, the one on the alt-right.
Yeah.
That was removed at the same time that our books were taken
17
off
of our titles.
And I'm assuming that's because Jared Taylor has a contribution in there and they deplatformed him from Amazon.
Yeah.
Well, it's also the story of the Dugan books of Arctos, which were removed. But that's for a different reason. That's because
sanctions against Dugan.
Which is still ridiculous that they took those books off. But
I think you related it to me that you were told by somebody who knows about these sanctions that, if you visited Dugan and talked to him as an American citizen, that's no problem. But if you bought him a cup of coffee, the State Department might come after you.
Yeah, you could go to prison for 20 years is what he was told.
Yeah.
Because he'd be, aiding an enemy of the United States.
Yeah. This is a guy who's an enemy of the United States because he writes books, basically,
yes,
and makes podcasts and public statements. But of course, the United States government is only bound by the First Amendment and such considerations with its own citizens. And you can tell that if we didn't have the Bill of Rights, that we would all be basically slaves of that oligarchy, given their behavior towards people who don't fall under the benefits of U.S. citizenship around the world. At the same time, many of Arctos's authors are celebrated in the darkest corners of the internet.
Of course, that nothing specific is named.
I guess it's that Tilak book on the Arctic Home and the Vedas again.
Or the Hare Krishna books.
Yeah, yeah.
They're celebrating those.
There are all these trolls who are Tilak posting in every comment thread.
Like in the Siege Culture site.
Yeah, yeah.
They're always talking about Tilak and Prabhupada.
Yeah. PDFs of their books live on the image board site 4chan.
See, this is so ridiculous because those are pirated.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
how can you be responsible for the fact that people pirate your books?
Oh, I don't know. You're being linked to the books that are being pirated somehow because you're not profiting from it. I don't know. are categorized as mandatory reading for the Iron Pill, which is an alt-right superhero meme, and archived online just a few clicks away from excerpts of Hitler speeches and bomb-making manuals. I wonder how many clicks away Tess Owen is from excerpts from Hitler speeches and bomb-making manuals.
Well, in her case, it's probably she's a few clicks away from, you know, Che Guevara and Stalin and things like that.
The fact is that everything is connected to everything on the internet, and everything is only a few clicks away from anything else. And so when people start using this language, you just have to realize you're dealing with a fraudster.
Yes.
With a fool.
Yes.
Or somebody who thinks you're a fool. Many of Arctos's books have violent underpinnings. Evola's book, Metaphysics of War, aims to prepare readers to experience war in a way that will overcome the limited possibilities offered by our materialistic and degraded age.
Well, that book, that was the first book that we published as Integral Tradition Publishing in 2007. Mm-hmm. I edited it. Arctos still keeps it in print. I mean, that's just a blatant, and I'm sure deliberate misunderstanding what the book was about, because those essays were written at the time of the Second World War, and Abel was writing them for people who were being sent off to fight in that war. And he specifically says in there that you know, you shouldn't do it specifically for the war aims that are specified by politicians, but you should see it as an opportunity to develop yourself, and you should, you know, see it in this kind of spiritual way. So yeah,
it's,
the book is not in any way a call to commit violence, because as Abel himself writes in the book, you know, warfare, there's many different forms of warfare, and physically fighting people is only one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a book of, in a way, consolation to people who are caught up in the Second World War, which was not started by the Italians, by the way.
No.
And the purpose of the book is to help people gain some greater spiritual depth and understanding and profit from this horrible war that the whole world was being swept up into. That's its violent underpinnings. Violent underpinnings. Again, is English this woman's first language? It's just such sloppy thinking.
Well, her messages to me weren't particularly well written either.
Yeah, well, she was typing it out quickly as she was on a treadmill or something, probably. I'm reading Metaphysics of War, one post person wrote on 4chan. Oh, well, another authority.
A person on 4chan, yeah.
An authority. Arctos exists within a wider ecosphere of far-right publishing and media outfits, again, outfits, but its internationalism sets it apart. Its authors come from more than 19 different countries, and some of their titles have been translated into as many as 11 languages, including Latvian, Bulgarian, and Greek. Quote, because Arctos publishes so many far-right thinkers from Europe and the U.S., they played this role in bringing those ideas across different parts of the world, said Keegan Hanks. Again, this guy is almost illiterate. Keegan Hanks, a research analyst at the Intelligence Project of the SPLC.
Mm-hmm.
They're a physical manifestation of the same thing we've been observing, which is that it's an international movement connected by the internet. Thank God Keegan Hanks is drawing a salary down to come up with observations like this. And those ideas and being connected through institutions like Arctos. Am I missing words here? Or he's just missing thoughts, I think.
Or it was transcribed wrong by...
Yeah, and nobody caught it in the editorial process. After the New Zealand mosque attacks in March, counterterrorism experts concluded that far-right extremism officially posed a global threat.
Yes, yeah, whereas every time there's, you know, a shooting in Paris or in some other city where hundreds of people are killed by Islamic terrorists, we're always told it's not Islam that's the problem.
It's not connected to the Muslims in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But exactly. In our case, anything that happens anywhere in the world that even remotely resembles anything that we call for or uses the same language, that
makes us part of a global
that means
threat.
We're responsible.
Yeah. The shooter, in addition to posting his manifesto online, I think we should close down the internet then. I mean, he posted this online. We should deplatform the online. Had traveled extensively in Europe and Asia. Well, that's how sinister is that, traveling extensively. He donated $1,700 to the Austrian chapter of the far-right organization Generation Identity and exchanged emails with the leader.
You know, I really think identitarians are more fairly characterized almost as civic nationalists who care about ethnicity.
Yeah, but exactly. But again, if she had actually read the manifesto that he had posted online, she would have realized that the reason why he was giving money to a group like Generation Identity is precisely because he was hoping that, well, swine like her and like the swine at the SPLC and other swine in the Antifa and the governments of Europe would use that as an excuse to suppress Generation Identity, which was Terrence's goal. He wanted to wreck more moderate and sensible approaches to this because he was hoping somehow that if all the more sensible people are taken out of the game, that there'll be somehow a violent revolution that will overthrow the system then. Of course, if we don't have any guns and don't have any way of communicating with one another, it doesn't seem likely that there's going to be much of a revolution. But never mind. One of Arctos's published authors, Marcus Villinger, wrote The De Facto Manifesto for Generation Identity.
Okay, let me just say, because I was still part of Arctos when we published this book, that the Generation Identity organization made it clear that we could not in any way suggest this was a book that was officially endorsed by their organization.
Much less their manifesto.
So that the idea that it's their manifesto is wrong in every sense.
In the book, which Arctos has published in 10 languages, Villinger argues that older generations only embrace multiculturalism because they were embarrassed by Nazi Germany.
That's not what he writes at all.
Okay, well.
I mean, that's one of the reasons he gives, but the whole book is a condemnation of the 1968 generation. And one of the things he says is that they have this guilt over the... I mean, this is true for the entire West, because, of course, now we're supposed to believe that everyone who is white... Even in those countries that fought against the Third Reich, like Americans, were somehow complicit in this just by virtue of existing. Mm-hmm. So he just says that, you know, the guilt over the Holocaust and the Third Reich is something that motivates these people. But certainly his argument is more complex than that. He doesn't reduce it to that one point. That would be absurd.
Right, exactly.
Let's become multiculturalism because the Nazis were evil. I mean, I don't think that's the kind of logic that anybody uses.
It's certainly not that simple. I'm going to skip ahead a bit. Since the Christchurch shooting and the shooting at a synagogue in Poway, California, 6 weeks later, organizations like Arctos are now under fresh scrutiny for their role in forging an international community of hate.
International community of hate.
Yeah.
That just sounds so awful and sinister.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the next line. These guys are very careful, Schindler said. They don't outright call for people to inflict actual violence, but they get people thinking. They get people thinking so that it becomes acceptable later down the line to seek violence.
Well, I think that most Arctos authors would agree with me when I would say our goal is to avoid violence by addressing these problems now. You know, as Brody has said before in broadcasts, I mean, we're the ones who are proposing solutions to the violence.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The fact of the matter is that multiculturalists are the people who are forging an international community of hate. Multiculturalists, which overlap with Antifa, which is just a genuine open hate group, are the ones who are enforcing conditions that are designed to produce alienation, resentment, conflict, violence, hatred. And the whole point of ethno-nationalism is to come up with a sensible, workable alternative to that, namely giving people their own homelands. Multiculturalists are preaching an inherently violent ideology. They're apologists for an inherently violent ideology, and they're indeed part of an international network that promotes violence and hate.
Yes.
And they have the face, the gall to be crafting this kind of language. It's almost just pure projection.
Well, not only that, but they turn the other way whenever actual violence is committed by immigrants.
Yeah.
And so forth. We're just supposed to pretend that it's either not happening, or that if it does, it's somehow our own fault because, you know, we don't love them enough.
We don't love them enough, exactly. These guys are very careful. They don't outright call for people to inflict actual violence, but they get people thinking. Well, what are they getting people thinking about? What are we getting people thinking about? We're getting people thinking about the fact that multiculturalism is an inherently unworkable system, that the people who are promoting multiculturalism are creating a society that makes hatred, violence, and alienation inevitable. They don't want us saying that because we're the ones who are the bearers of bad news, namely that their ideals, their utopia is creating hell on earth. This is why they want to shut down. This is why they're trying to deplatform us. They're tired of losing arguments with us. Every time there's a fair debate with our ideas and theirs, they lose. And they're tired of that, and they're trying to shut us down.
I think the important part of that sentence is they get people thinking. That's what they don't
want. Yeah, we get people thinking. I think that Daniel Freeberg should probably quote that. It's a badge of honor. We get people thinking.
I certainly hope that we get people thinking.
I know we get people thinking. From Bangalore to Budapest. The early days of Arctos are a little hazy. Well, that's because she didn't do any research. Records show that the company was registered in London in 2009.
She did contact me, but I'll just say none of the questions in any way involved the history of Arctos.
Right, right. Well, just to say that it's a little hazy almost makes it seem like you guys are hiding something, whereas the real haze is in her own head, her
lack
of curiosity.
Well, it's because nobody bothered to do the research. Exactly.
It's like the early days of Christianity. It's all kind of hazy. At first, Freeberg was only a minority shareholder, having started the company with several others. Okay, well, that's a bit of disclosure, including American John Morgan, who now runs his own far-right publishing house called Countercurrents.
Is that news to you, Greg?
Yeah, I thought that I owned Countercurrents. This is why one has to read the mainstream media. One discovers things about oneself that one doesn't already know. By 2012, Freeberg was the majority shareholder of the company. Is
that
true?
No,
I think that was more like
several years later.
2016 or 17, maybe.
No, I think it was 2014.
Okay.
Yeah, but still, not as they make it seem.
Freeberg was raised in a wealthy suburb of Gothenburg, Sweden, by a politically left-leaning family. As a teenager, he got involved with local neo-Nazis. In 1999, four of Sweden's biggest daily newspapers published the same article on the same day, listing the names and mugshots of the 62 most dangerous Nazis in the country. Freeberg, then 21, made the cut. At the time, he was running a white power publication and an anti-LGBTQ, was Q even in there at that time, or T, newspaper. Yeah. And he'd been charged by Swedish prosecutors for agitating against an ethnic group. I wonder which group that was. Between 1995 and 2010, Freeberg was in and out of prison for various offenses, including possession of a stolen AK-4 rifle that was formerly used by the Swedish Army, according to Carol Schaefer, a journalist who's done extensive research on Freeberg, including in his own living room. In 2007, he founded Nordisk.nu, an online forum catering to Scandinavian neo-Nazis, among them Norwegian terrorist Anders Breivik, who had murdered 77 people in a killing spree 4 years later.
That's right. If somebody comes to your website,
and
you're responsible.
Creates a crime. Yeah. Unless, of course, you're Vice or HuffPo.
Right.
But at some point, Freeberg switched gears. Around 2013, he was appointed to the board of Viking Minerals. Mineral, I think it is, a gold mining company owned by Patrick Brinkman, who is reported to be essentially bankrolling neo-fascist movements across Europe.
That's if you consider Pegida to be a neo-fascist.
Oh, yeah, Pegida,
that's right. That's the group that he was funding, as far as I know.
Okay. according to a 2008 investigation by the German newspaper Der Spiegel.
Oh, they should also mention that Brinkman, actually, he's so beloved in Israel that he was actually invited to address the Knesset.
Ah,
so that's how fascist he is.
Yeah, that's a serious fascist.
Although, as one person once told me, somebody told me that Trump was a fascist. And I said, well, how do you explain the fact that he's so pro-Israel and he has a Jewish daughter and son-in-law? And I was told, well, that's because, you know, fascism today isn't the same as it used to be. So now to be a Nazi means to be that you're invited to
You can be
at the
beloved
Knesset
at the Knesset.
Or you're friends with Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Or
Bibi. Yes. In 2010, Brinkman announced that he was donating more than $7 million to an anti-Islam populist party based in Cologne, Germany.
I don't know why they don't mention it by name.
Yeah, because the country was becoming too foreign. In 2015, Freeberg was appointed CEO of Viking.
Now it's Metals.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, maybe the company changed its name. During this period, Freeberg also started making inroads with members of the French New Right.
That's news to me.
Inroads. What does inroads mean?
I don't know. I mean,
was he getting them to invest money in something? Inroads into their pocketbooks?
I mean, we started publishing Alain de Benoist from 2010. Is that an inroad?
I guess.
Publishing somebody's book. And we never, at least when I was at Arctos, and I don't think anything has changed, we never had any direct relationship with Gress.
Yeah.
Or any of the rest, we just translated Benoit's book. I mean, he gave us permission, of course. Nouvelle de la group of far right. Well, even in France today, in the mainstream media, they no longer consider Benoit and his friends to be far right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's another.
Well, I guess it just means inroads means publishing their books.
Well, but I think that choice of words is deliberate because, again, it sounds very sinister.
Yeah.
See, there's this French New Right, and now Arctos is coming in, and they're linking up, which makes them twice as powerful, you see.
Yeah.
So inroads, that sounds better than publishing.
Yeah. It's a typical story where this was a guy who 20 years ago was a hardline right-wing, hanging out with more or less unsavory skinhead types.
More or less unsavory.
Yeah. Schindler said, and then reinvented himself as this respectable businessman with these far-right intellectuals. It doesn't even make any sense.
And the reason that he's considered a respectable businessman is because articles like this continue to repeat it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Freeberg started appearing in a suit and clean-shaven. Well, was he ever... Well, he's bearded now. I mean, earlier on, I thought he was clean-shaven, and now he wears facial hair. But anyway, none of this matters. Around that time, he also founded Motpol, a far-right think tank. Again, the time frame is kind of vague here. He was
Motpol predates Arctos, actually.
Yeah.
So it goes back more than 10 years.
Yeah. He was once described to me as a political entrepreneur, says Benjamin Teitelbaum. Probably described by Freeberg himself, actually, assistant professor of ethnomusicology and international affairs at the University of Colorado Boulder. It's not that he's an influential speaker or that as an ideologue he's been innovative. It's more in terms of methodology, platforms, media.
What's the title of that chapter in the Thinkers of the Right book?
Oh, gosh, it's in the other room. I don't know. But there's a chapter on Freeberg written by Ben Teitelbaum in his Key Thinkers of the Radical
Culture.
Right. Yeah, expressive culture, which means nothing. But I pointed this out in my review of it a couple months back, that this is truly a violation of academic ethics. Basically, what Teitelbaum did is he's buddies with Freeberg, and he talks about how he's buddies with Freeberg, and parts of it read like it was written by Freeberg, and it's just a completely uncritical puff piece that tries to paint him as this world-spanning Svengali-type business magnet character. And it's just
full disclosure that I'll just mention that Teitelbaum has interviewed me too. So.
Yeah, well, you know, you might come out as even more important when this is finally published. But anyway, so Teitelbaum has written numerous books about the Scandinavian far right, and it's difficult to find a far right media company that Freeberg hasn't been involved in.
Is that true?
Well, I mean, he has. You know, and what was the nature of his involvements and his departures? Obviously, a lot of these groups that he was involved in and then left He left under clouds of accusations of embezzlement and doxing and informing to the police and things like this. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of stuff that Teitelbaum leads from this biography in this chapter in the book. And of course, Tess Owen isn't curious enough to look into it either. According to company documents in 2016, Freeburg moved Arctos to Budapest. What company documents would those be?
Well, yeah, because there was actually, I mean, Arctos, as far as I know, is still based in the UK, but at that time there was, I think, a side company set up in.
Oh, okay.
But as far as I know, there's the UK one is still the main one. I don't know. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
My knowledge is out of date, but.
Freeburg started living lavishly after moving to Budapest, according to former Arctos editor Morgan, who's in an ongoing feud with Freeburg stemming from a power struggle over the company's finances.
If there's an ongoing feud, it's entirely from their camp, because I haven't been pursuing it since I wrote that one article 2 years ago, which was a response to an attack on me.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least she read my article, which is something. But it also, stemming from a power struggle over the company's finances, which I wasn't involved in, I should probably mention.
That's true.
That was between him and the other shareholders.
Yeah.
So that's an inaccuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, so there's a quote about his flat. Teitelbaum's description is of him as perpetually late and impeccably dapper. Arctos's financials are ultimately unclear, yet somehow she knows he's a magnate. And Freeburg declined repeated requests for interviews about his work and the company. The most reliable available financial records for Arctos, which was incorporated in the United Kingdom, showed that they had little cash on hand, $10,000 in 2016, $55,000 the following year. But the company has grown. Today it has a 14-person staff. Well, how many of those people are paid?
I have no idea.
Well,
I was there, we certainly had a lot of volunteers. But
Yeah. Consisting of editors, art directors, proofreaders, and marketing officers, up from 9 staff in 2016, according to archive webpages. It's not clear whether that's a reflection of book sales or investment by Freeburg.
Like from what? Because he doesn't get any money apart from what Arctos makes.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. But it coincided with a movement, with a moment of great uncertainty across Europe and the United States. Economic anxieties, the refugee crisis, and a string of deadly Islamic State attacks fueled a wave of populism. The ugly specter of racism in America came out of the shadows during the 2016 presidential election
Greg, under Obama, racism was completely absent from America.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It was Trump that brought it out.
Yeah, exactly. After Trump was elected, Richard Spencer led a room full of men wearing suits and a Heil Hitler salute in celebration.
Well, we know that that's not entirely true.
Not entirely true. In July 2017, Freeburg and Spencer launched AltRight.com, a Virginia-based blog. In August that year, Freeburg traveled to Charlottesville, Virginia, where he was slated as a speaker at the violent Unite the Right rally, where a neo-Nazi killed protester Heather Heyer and left dozens injured. They just have this as boilerplate, I'm sure, at Vice and HuffPost.
I'm surprised they didn't mention the police who died.
Yeah.
You usually see that in reference to Charlottesville, as though the protesters had anything. Well, not the protesters, but the marchers had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. I just think that this is it's getting really boring here. Let's see if there's any other stuff. He maintained some ties with preppy white nationalist group Identity Europa, who recently rebranded into American Identity Movement.
Well, that's not
this
really
is not true. Identity Europa still exists. It is a legal entity. I don't know if it has many members because a lot of members left it. And they formed the American Identity Movement. And the reason they did that is because, well, there was a debate in the aftermath of Charlottesville about optics and American nationalism and so forth. And a new consensus formed that it made sense to couch white identity politics in America in terms of American identity and American history. And I think that that basically was the reason why eventually this split took place. Identity Europa advertise Arctos books. Yeah, well, they don't exist anymore, so that's just ancient history.
Well, then they try to make five seem evil.
Yeah.
In that paragraph.
Yeah.
Stokes fears of a genetic bomb and racial chaos in Europe due to immigration. I mean, how could anybody come up with an idea like that?
Yeah, where would anyone get ideas like this?
Unless their eyes are open and they've been to Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, an international community of hate. That line was so beautiful earlier that it's now the headline of a whole section. According to sales data from Barnes & Noble, Arctos' best-selling title is Fourth Political Theory by Alexander Dugin, a Kremlin-linked ideologue who has met with Pizzagate conspiracy theorists.
They mean Alex Jones.
I guess. appears on the far-right Red Ice TV and is worshipped by the likes of former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke.
What the hell? I actually clicked on the link. It's just to a tweet that Duke...
Does he say, I worship Mr. Dugin?
He just refers to Dugin and says, oh, he's an important person in Russian nationalism or something, but that's all.
This is like reading Matt Forney. I mean, this is at Forney level. Okay. Anyway, this is really dumb. This Valencia Garcia person has studied Freeburg for years and suspects he cares more about being influential than he does about making money. The ideas are being disseminated in these relatively short books, but also through social media, said Valencia Garcia. Some of these texts are shared digitally as PDFs, and very popular YouTube personalities review and talk about the books. Ho-hum, this is definitely part of an international conspiracy.
Of hate.
Of hate, yeah. Let's see. Oh, we have a... Evola is also an example of someone who has gained what Pete Simi, an expert in extremism and an associate professor of sociology at Chapman University in Orange, California, described as cross-cutting currency, meaning they function as the glue within the seemingly disparate political movement.
I really question that. I mean, there's a small number of people I've met within our circles who are influenced by Evola, but I would say more broadly, yes, that people know who Evola was.
Yeah.
Generally, their understanding is very superficial.
Yeah.
I don't see Evola as the glue of anything.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of people...
Actually, a lot of people. He's actually a polarizing figure.
Right.
For people who read him.
And here we get to Bannon again.
Yeah, former Trump advisor and Breitbart executive Steve Bannon once referred to Evola during remarks at a 2014 conference at the Vatican. You know, and
once referenced,
yeah. And Spencer said Bannon's familiarity with Evola meant a tremendous amount.
Well if Richard Spencer says it,
yeah,
it must
yeah.
be.
Richard Spencer ran a journal of radical traditionalism, remember? And a podcast of radical traditionalism. So he would know something about Evola.
Yes.
Experts say that the creation of Experts say that the creation of a literary canon has always been a key element of extremist movements, particularly for recruitment, because it provides a veneer of intellectual legitimacy for ugly ideas.
Well, leftists certainly understand that very well.
Yeah. The first task can often be, read this book, said SPLC's Hanks. They want to be right, and the way to be right is to point to folks who are supposedly respectable.
Yeah, if somebody tells you to read a book, you should immediately
start thinking,
what does ulterior motive
mean? Yeah, I don't know. I don't want you to get me thinking here. Are you trying to get me thinking? And when somebody says, read a book, Keegan Hanks reaches for his revolver. That's the message here. Well, gosh, we've been swishing this around in our mouths like fine port for an hour, so we should wrap up.
But do you want to say something about Duchesne?
I think we're going to have to do that another time. I would recommend that everyone read Colin Cleary's article about Ricardo Duchesne, who's under attack in a similarly scurrilous and disgusting fashion.
Yes, it's another prong in the same sort of attack.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Been made on Arctos.
Maybe we should just comment on these things because they're relatively new people. Everything we put out is going to be the first thing that somebody reads or hears in our milieu. And so sometimes just teaching people critical reading skills is a useful exercise. I want to wrap up by just saying one thing. Countercurrents has a new book out. I have a new book out. It's called Toward a New Nationalism. It is a collection of essays. It is something of a companion to my last book, The White Nationalist Manifesto. It is my ninth book. Countercurrents is coming up on our ninth anniversary of being in existence. That will be on June 11th. And Toward a New Nationalism is, I think it's an important follow-up to the White Nationalist Manifesto because it provides a lot of context for the essays in the White Nationalist Manifesto that I had to eliminate from it to keep that book kind of thin. And it has a number of other works that were written just independently for presentation at conferences and so forth. I think there's some of my better recent essays in there. And this is available in paperback, hardcover, and also a limited edition. There's an ebook out too. There will be an audiobook soon, but it's also available in a limited, signed, numbered edition of 200 copies, comparable to the limited edition that I put out of the White Nationalist Manifesto. And I want to just lay this out there because this is an important tool for us, an important way that Countercurrents stays afloat, frankly, is putting out these limited editions. And I'm going to be starting to do that for all of my significant books in the future. Recently, 2 weeks ago to this day, actually, Countercurrents was deplatformed by one of our credit card processors. And we have lost all of our monthly donations. We are working to get alternatives in place, but until then, we are going to start our annual fundraiser today rather than on the 11th when we usually do it, because we would like to overcome this new financial crisis that has hit us. And we are, like I said, working to get alternatives in place where we can actually take subscriptions. Recurring donations. But until then, we can take your purchases, we can take your one-off donations, and we would very much like to get people donating to us and also buying Toward a New Nationalism. We have a new book out by Tito Perdue called The Smut Book. We have a couple other new books that will be appearing in the next couple of weeks as well. So if you are friends of Countercurrents, supporters of Countercurrents, it's time to rally. Because they're coming for us, folks. You know, they're doing it to us again. They have deplatformed us yet again. And they keep doing this because they hope that eventually they'll put us out of business. They'll knock us out of the game.
And, which is the same thing that Vice is trying to do with Arctos
in
this article.
Yeah. Arctos is next, but Countercurrents is first. Because we put out stuff that is more openly political. We don't skirt the line of white nationalism. We publish the White Nationalist Manifesto. So we're under a little bit more scrutiny and under a little bit more pressure because of this, but they are coming for Arctos and they're doing it to us again. So please support us and tune in again next week for another episode of Countercurrents Radio.
Bye-bye, everyone.